You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tonight after 7, it's True Stories Told Live on the Moth Radio Hour. Tonight, a heartbroken woman has a wish come true, a homeowner gets an unwanted surprise, and a struggling temp remembers his glory days. So that's tonight after 7 here on the Ideas Network.
First, Congress voted this week to nullify an FCC rule that regulated how internet providers gathered and used your internet browsing data. The vote was along party lines and is expected to be signed into law by President Trump.
The move means that internet providers, think companies like AT&T and Verizon, could sell your searches and location to companies, which in turn could create highly tailored ads for their products.
Barry Orton joins us now. He's Professor Emeritus of Telecom Policy at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Barry, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me, Veronica.
Well, Congress voted to roll back this Obama-era internet privacy rule. What was the intent of the original rule?
Well, the intent of the original rule was to allow consumers' personal information that goes out over the internet, what they buy, what kinds of airline flights they get, those kinds of things, and ban that from being used commercially by internet providers. And by internet providers, we're talking about phone companies like AT&T and Verizon and cable companies like Charter and Comcast. So the idea was an FCC rule that hasn't gone into effect yet. It was in the process of being implemented. And that rule would essentially treat those providers as a screen so that they were going to force them to have their customers opt in if they wanted their information sold, rather than the current system, which lets people essentially opt out. And it's much easier to get people to opt out than it is to have them actually decide to opt in. Now, this doesn't mean that Google and Facebook aren't doing the exact same thing right now. They are tailoring your ads based on what you've been watching and what you've been looking at on your screen. And anybody who's been on Google or Facebook at any length of time knows that it's very obvious that they're getting ads that are tailored to what you've been looking at.
And, yeah, let's talk about that for a minute. Do you see any differentiation that's big enough to say, look, these are two different things, having internet service providers have access to do this and having some platforms like Google and Facebook? Or is it pretty tantamount one to the other?
Well, I think in effect they're tantamount, but the legal aspect was that the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, doesn't have any jurisdiction over Google and Facebook, but it does have jurisdiction, or it did under the scheme that they were trying to put in, over the AT&Ts and Comcast. So it's not that they didn't want to include them, it's that they didn't have the legal right to include them. So these were rules that were essentially put into effect or started in effect in the last year or so. And so they really haven't been fully implemented yet, so the fact that they're being struck down by Congress doesn't change anything for anybody. We're in the same boat we were 6 months ago or 2 years ago.
So it's not like suddenly we're going to sit down at our computer and, you know, be caught flat-footed with all kinds of sensitive work data or something, things we don't want out there. This has not gone into effect, but down the road, what sorts of side
down
effects?
Down the road, it means that anybody who has access to your information, whether it's your carrier, the people who own the wire that you're using and paying to have internet service, or the platforms you're using like Google or Facebook, they're going to be tailoring advertising directly to you. This is very big business. Last year, Google made over $30 billion in the digital advertising business, and Facebook made $16 billion. So it's not small change, and AT&T and Comcast have been chafing at the bit to get a piece of that action. And so what this law does, incidentally, as your report says, passed on strict party lines pretty much, this will allow them to get in that same advertising business too. What ultimately that means is anything you do on the internet, you can be pretty sure that somebody can capture and either use to sell you more products or use to invade your privacy, and there's not a whole lot anybody's going to be able to do about it.
Now, you're saying this broke down pretty much along party lines. Republicans were in favor of rolling back this rule that had not gone into effect yet.
Yes.
But so politically, what was the argument there for politically and also business-wise from Republicans about why this was the choice they wanted to make?
Well, the argument was twofold. One, it was started by Democrats, and they didn't like that. It was started by FCC chairman who was used a Democrat majority on the commission to push it through. And second, they don't like the bigger scheme of the Internet being regulated in any way, shape, or form by federal agencies. They're not happy about that. And this is part of a whole bigger scheme called net neutrality. And that was another FCC law that went into effect in 2016. In 2015, and it was upheld in the courts in 2016. And that said that the Internet was like a public utility, and so it should be regulated like telephone is regulated, rather than as an information service like Facebook or Google. And so Republicans generally don't, and the industries that support them generally didn't like that either. So this is one part of a larger dismantling of what had been set up over the last few years under a Democratic administration.
So is it your best guess that net neutrality will be the next to fall and to change course on this?
Net neutrality and the idea that Internet services are treated under what's called Title II, Roman number two, like telephone is, where there are rights of privacy, where there are public utility-like regulation that protects consumers, that also will be on the in the crosshairs of the Republican administration and the Republican Congress.
Barry Orton is with us right now. He's professor emeritus of telecom policy at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And we're talking about the House vote that would get rid of an FCC rule that prevents your Internet service provider from selling your browsing habits.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What are your thoughts on this rule? Never quite into effect, now apparently on the way out, pending the president's signature. Do you worry about your privacy online? Do you worry that the things you search for, the emails you send, the data you collect, the data you leave can form a trail that can be used to market products to you? Or are you not worried about that? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're continuing our conversation about a recent vote in the House that would strike down an FCC rule preventing your Internet service provider from selling your browsing data to companies looking to market products to you. And we're talking with Barry Orton about this news. He's Professor Emeritus of Telecom Policy at the University of Wisconsin-Madison.
You can join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Are you for or against rolling back this rule? Looks like it's on the way out, pending White House approval. Are you worried about your privacy when you go online, the paper trail, the virtual paper trail you leave when you browse online, maybe shopping, maybe for health information, you name it? Do you want that info out there and sold to marketers? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or leave a comment on the Central Time Facebook page.
We take a caller now. We've got Jason joining us in Wausau. Hi, Jason.
Hey, how are you guys? Thanks for taking my call. So I actually own a high-speed internet business. It's a pretty small network. We're a provider that kind of aims to help the rural areas where they can't get access to good data. And I have just a couple thoughts on this. First, I'm against rolling this rule back and the idea that net neutrality should be in any way compromised, just in the sense that consumers really aren't going to win here. I feel like there could be some sort of alteration to this that more or less allowed or required ISPs that are going to profit from this information to reinvest some of that money into their networks. You know, because right now you've got a lot of big companies and corporations that won't expand into the rural areas because of, you know, the economics behind that situation. And so this seems like a good opportunity to at least help the customers in those areas to maybe have a better experience. You know, if you're going to pay for the data, they're going to sell your browsing history and just walk away with that cash. I feel like the legislative bodies need to do something to force the hand with the expansion to at least get the experience for customers on a better level. I don't personally think that I would ever take my customers' information that trust me with their internet usage and sell that to somebody. I just morally, to me, it's just wrong as somebody in the industry.
Jason, thank you so much for that call. Interesting point there, Jason, thinking that the profits that are garnered from whatever sort of advertising, marketing money that could be made from these ISPs, some of that should go back to benefit the community. Some people, for instance, in Wisconsin, maybe, who may not have good internet access.
I wouldn't be holding my breath waiting for that to happen.
Yeah, and so what do you think is going to happen with these profits? It's just, it's business.
It goes to the bottom line of Comcast and AT&T. There's not going to be any quid pro quo that's going to make the companies who profit from our privacy plow that back into giving us better service.
Well,
that's not going to happen in my lifetime.
Do consumers have any leverage with this? I mean,
not really. They have very little leverage, actually. AT&T and Comcast are going to do what they want to do for their bottom line. And if consumers don't like it, they can, A, not shop online and not do searches and so on health issues and things that they don't want others to deal with. In some ways, you are going to have more privacy by picking up the phone and talking to someone about your purchases or about your health issue than you would by filling out forms online or searching. And that's ironic, but old media, i.e. telephones, are still protected, and our privacy is still protected by a considerably larger amount than it is online. We are anonymous sometimes online, or at least we think we are, so we can say things we might not want to say on the telephone or directly to a person. But that anonymity is just really ephemera. It's not real.
And Barry, what about VPNs? I guess this is virtual provider networks. Some people are saying this is one way to go if you want to try to safeguard privacy.
There's a lot of different technical ways you can encrypt. You can have virtual private networks, all that kind of thing. There's always ways to get around that. But quite frankly, you're really going to be not going to be guaranteeing privacy. If you want to keep stuff private, you don't put it out on the internet.
Jason, thanks so much for that call. Appreciate it. And we go next to Neil in Madison. Neil, hi.
Hello.
How would you want to share?
I think the view that this data is going to be used exclusively for marketing is an incredibly narrow view of this. Since, you know, they'll sell the data to basically anybody who will buy it, I can see things happening like your employer wants to know what you've been looking at. The political parties want to know what you're looking at, and so on.
Absolutely right.
So the idea that this is all about marketing is really not looking far enough at what could be done with this.
Barry, you're agreeing with this. What do you see as the frontiers of how this data could be used?
Well, I agree it can be used and will be used politically. And those who worry about the United States becoming a more fascist country in terms of having authoritarian rule, these would be tools that can be used very easily to see what other kinds of activities, political and otherwise, people are doing. And so I didn't want to imply that marketing and money is the only reason to be worried about this, but that's the first and most obvious reason. But the others are even scarier, and I'm probably in denial about them.
What do you think about the argument that rolling back this rule fosters innovation and gives consumers, you got at this before a little bit, but ads that are more relevant to their lives instead of something random that has no bearing?
It is more innovative to show me an advertisement for something that I've recently searched for rather than a random advertisement. Similarly, it's innovation to show me an ad politically if I've been active politically, but I'm not sure that's innovation that really takes us in the right direction.
Well, Neil, thank you for that call. Another quick one here from David in Delavan. David, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to maybe throw out there sort of a question. And it seems that everybody's kind of buying into this as being about advertising. And I'm just curious, sort of a white elephant in the room thing. We all know, or most of us, or whatever the percentages know, that the government and big business go hand in hand, and it seems to be, you know, being touted to us that it's all about, you know, what pair of socks you might want to buy, or if this canoe is a better value than that one. But it's I don't know that anybody really trusts anymore the idea that the more information about you that these big businesses can get is a good thing.
David, thanks for that, and short of time, so Barry, your response.
I guess I'm agreeing. I don't like to start looking at the worst possible scenarios, but yes, government control of this kind of information is possible, and this can increase the possibility. And to just put your listeners off in the same direction slightly further, it's just been announced today that AT&T has gotten a very large federal contract to do a large national public safety network for first responders. And so there will be a direct link between AT&T and law enforcement. They're going to be providing the network that law enforcement uses on a national basis.
And Barry, a couple seconds here. Is President Trump going to sign this? This is
absolutely
a sure thing.
They've announced today, Sean Spicer at his press conference said that they're all in favor of it. So there's no doubt that it'll be signed. It passed the Senate by party lines, passed the House by party lines. I can't imagine any scenario where he doesn't sign it.
Barry, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That's Barry Orton, Professor Emeritus of Telecom Policy at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, joining us there to talk about the House vote that would roll back an FCC rule that was put into place to keep Internet service providers from selling your Internet browsing data.
Now, our next installment in our year-long series called State of Change, Water, Food, and the Future of Wisconsin. American dairy cows are producing more milk than they ever have, but as the amount of milk goes up, the number of cows is actually going down. Bridget Bowden has more on how that happens and what it means for the dairy industry.
Last year, the average American dairy cow produced more than 22,000 pounds of milk. In Waldo, Wisconsin, there's a cow that produced more than three times that, setting the national record for milk production. She belongs to Tom Kestel of Evergreen View Farm. She shattered the record by producing more than 77,000 pounds of milk in 1 year. That's enough to fill an Olympic swimming pool. Kestel says she's a pretty typical cow for his herd.
As you can see, she just stands in a stall just like everybody else. No special treatment.
Kestel says the secret to getting his cows to produce so much milk is good breeding. He makes about two-thirds of his income breeding the high-producing cows and then selling their genes all over the world.
That is certainly not part of our goal at all, is to set a new national record in anything. Our goal is to take care of our cows, breed good cows, have good cows, sell good cows to other people.
Kestel's champion cow is an extreme example, but average milk per cow has shot up since 1950. Today we have less than half as many dairy cows as we did then, but they produce almost twice as much milk. Mark Stevenson is the director for dairy policy analysis at the UW Center for Dairy Profitability. He says the introduction of artificial insemination is one of the reasons for this huge rise in milk production.
We went from natural breeding of cows to artificial insemination of cows, and that let us have better genetic selection of animals than just, you know, what your best-looking bull out of the herd it used to be.
He says better nutrition and management have contributed to the spike in milk production, as well as vaccines and the controversial growth hormone RBST, which makes cows produce more milk.
No question that is efficacious. A cow will produce more milk if provided that product. But increasingly, consumers have been pushing away from that, and there's much less used of that product today.
And within the last decade, there was another development that changed the industry. The bovine genome was sequenced and published in 2009. Since then, breeding cows based on the properties contained in their DNA has been on the rise.
Before we could take a look right into the DNA, we were changing the DNA of the cattle. We were selecting bulls who had certain performance.
That's Ryan Starkenberg. He's the senior geneticist for ABS Global, a large artificial insemination company based in DeForest. He says one of the problems with high production cows is they sometimes have trouble with reproducing, but with genomics, they can try to breed that out.
We can actually select for cows that are better milk producers as well as more reproductively efficient and can breed back more easily, calve more easily, and so on. So those animals are hard to find. But once we find them, we can then use the artificial breeding to really spread their genes around the country and around the world.
Tom Kessel, who owns the Champion Cow, has sold genetics in dozens of countries. He says he's seen the dairy industry change a lot since he started milking cows in the 1950s.
But yet, still the same goal is the same, is to be able to produce milk as cheaply and economically as you can, without sacrificing the well-being of the cow.
And he says he expects it to keep changing and milk production to keep going up. And it needs to, as worldwide dairy consumption is also on the rise. Bridget Bowden, Wisconsin Public Radio.
This story is part of a year-long reporting project at WPR called State of Change, Water, Food, and the Future of Wisconsin. Find stories on Morning Edition, All Things Considered, the Ideas Network, and online at WPR.org/change.
Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, a Wisconsin healthcare policy expert joins the show for a look at what happens to Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, after the failed congressional effort to repeal and replace it.
A physicist tries to help us understand why we exist and what our place is in the universe.
And on this week's edition of Food Friday, we'll get some inspiration from across the Pacific Ocean. We'll talk to the author of the new cookbook, Let's Cook Japanese. And I got to say, this is a genre of cooking, except for buying a jar of teriyaki sauce at the store, I know nothing about. This will be a learning experience for me.
And I made, we tried to make some sushi and ended up basically covered in rice with little balls of seaweed.
Yeah. We all have a lot to learn coming up tomorrow on Central Time. Weekday mornings from 6 to 9, it's the Joy Cardine Show. Tomorrow after 6, it's a spring edition of Tell Joy Where to Go. Travel expert Gary Knowles shares some great springtime destinations and events from all over Wisconsin. You can call in with some of your favorites, too. That's tomorrow morning after 8 here on the Ideas Network.
Coming up next, it's the news from NPR and WPR. And then we look at a growing spat between Governor Walker and state GOP lawmakers over his budget's impact on transportation funding and taxes. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Farah. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.